The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Steve Lord from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to a half hour of captivating developments in science, medicine, technology, and the world around us, as reported in Discover, the magazine of science. Today's episode from the April and the January-February 2018 issues of Discover features two brief stories on fake wombs and the equator, and six other stories on the Aral Sea, hominin tracks, cassowaries, smell, evolution, and diamonds. A functioning fake womb. In a potential breakthrough for human babies born prematurely, scientists announced this year they'd successfully removed lamb fetuses from their mothers' wombs and raised them into healthy sheep. Their survival comes thanks to an artificial placenta, called a biobag, created by researchers at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The fake womb consists of a clear plastic bag filled with electrolytes. The lamb's umbilical cord pulls in nutrients, and its heart pumps blood through an external oxygenator. The success caps a decade-long effort toward a working artificial placenta. The biobag could improve human infant mortality rates and lower the chances of a premature baby developing lung problems or cognitive disorders. But there are still challenges to scaling the device for human babies, which are much smaller than lambs. The scientists are also refining the electrolyte mix and studying how to connect human umbilical cords. They expect human trials in 3 to 5 years. The equator could be uninhabitable. Heat waves can kill people, and by 2100, half of Earth's population could experience 20 days or more of life-threatening heat every year. And that's if humans drastically reduce their CO2 footprint. In the worst-case scenario, if greenhouse gas emissions keep growing, some 75% of humans could feel that deadly heat, according to a June paper published in Nature Climate Change. The research team, led by University of Hawaii scientists, analyzed future climate trends by looking at studies of past heat waves. They found that combinations of heat and humidity exceeding our ability to cool ourselves with sweat could regularly threaten large swaths of humanity by 2100. What's more, the analysis indicates that many regions near the tropics in particular, where billions of people live, would experience conditions regularly exceeding that limit, making the areas effectively uninhabitable. Repairing a sea, checking in on plans to restore the Aral Sea. More than a decade ago, Discover reported on an $85 million project to restore what was formerly one of the world's biggest inland bodies of water, the Aral Sea. An oasis on the Silk Road trading route, the sea once covered more than 26,000 square miles across the heart of Central Asia, including parts of Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. This all changed in the 1950s when a Soviet irrigation project diverted river water to rice and cotton fields miles away. The system leaked, and the sea began to dry up. By the 1990s, the Aral had shrunk to less than half its former size and was dangerously salty. It was no longer one body of water, but two lobes, a smaller North Aral Sea in Kazakhstan and a larger South Aral Sea in Uzbekistan. The region's fishing industry collapsed, and many residents fled. In 2001, the World Bank teamed up with the oil-rich government of Kazakhstan, pumping millions of dollars into a reconstruction effort for the northern lobe via local rivers. The project, Discover reported in 2006, has reconstructed nearly 60 miles of canals, sluices, and waterworks, dramatically improving water distribution in Kazakhstan. The river flow now efficiently irrigates fields and runs into and rejuvenates the dried-up Aral Sea. In the 12 years since that story was published, water levels in the North Lobe have risen by nearly 7 feet. Salinity has stabilized, and many species of fish have returned. The fisheries there are doing very well, says Philip Bicklin, a geographer emeritus from Western Michigan University who has studied the Aral Sea for decades and was featured in the original article. Since the restoration project began, he says, the North Aral Sea region has seen a huge improvement in the economy and the standard of living. But the future of the South Aral Sea, with no major institutional support, is hazier. Its eastern basin dried up completely in 2014, and while it partially refilled in August 2017, Micklin says this was a temporary seasonal change due to heavy rainfall. With Uzbekistan currently drilling for oil and gas beneath the bone-dry bottom of the former sea, and local farmers still desperate for their own water, it's unlikely the Southern Sea will expand. Still, some efforts to restore wetlands around the South Aral Sea have been successful. Overall, Micklin is certain the sea will endure. The suggestion that the Aral Sea would ever disappear completely is simply nonsense, he says. Hominin trackways in Greece? The game is afoot. About 5.7 million years ago, on what's now the Greek island of Crete, something went for a stroll. Walking on two legs, its clawless feet left impressions. Instead of its first toe sticking out thumb-like as an ape's would, this creature's big toe was in line with the other four. This trait, and other features preserved in the ancient prints, are unique to hominins, primates more closely related to us than to apes or chimps. And in an analysis published in August, researchers concluded, controversially, that these footprints at Trakalos, Crete, appear to belong to a hominin, walking where none was thought to set foot until millions of years later. Other fossilized trackways have provided valuable insight about how our lineage evolved to walk upright, but the oldest currently accepted hominin trackway, at Laetoli in Tanzania, is 3.6 million years old. The Trakalos prints are about 2 million years older. The Greek tracks are also thousands of miles from eastern Africa, where nearly all paleoanthropologists believe hominins, including humans, evolved. Trakalos study co-author Per Alberg, a paleontologist at Sweden's Uppsala University, says critics have accused the team of trying to revive a long-debunked idea that our species evolved in Europe. Some people have suggested that we are driven by a Eurocentrism claim. We are making no claim whatsoever, says Alberg. It's clear modern humans evolved in Africa. Instead, he says, the Trakalos prints show at least one branch of early hominins was present in Europe, and that members of our family tree were walking efficiently on two legs more than a million years earlier than we thought. The technical side is well done. The analysis itself is complex and sophisticated. They've thought it through, says William Harcourt Smith, a paleoanthropologist at New York's Lehman College and the American Museum of Natural History. But the devil is in the details. For example, Harcourt Smith notes that bears, whose hind legs do not typically make claw impressions, were present in this region at the time, but the team compared the prints with only a bear's forelimb. The lack of claws is one of the traits cited by the authors as evidence a hominin made the prints. Bears do rear up and move bipedally on occasion, Harcourt Smith says. I'm not saying that's what this is, but it was a major omission not to include hind leg bear prints for comparison. New things get discovered all the time that challenge old thinking, and that's wonderful. But this is a big claim. It needs to be properly comparative. It needs to be better, he adds. In a bizarre twist, in mid-September, some of the impressions were cut from the rock and stolen. Greek authorities quickly arrested a man suspected of trying to sell the prints, which were recovered. The site is now off-limits under a protective cover of tarps and a great big heap of rubble, says co-author Matthew Bennett of Bournemouth University, one of the world's leading experts on hominin trackways. Bennett says research will continue using the team's high-resolution digital scans, a permanent record of the trackways. No scientific data has been lost. A brush with a feathered foe. How one researcher narrowly escaped a nasty face-off. A researcher investigating how the stress levels of people in non-industrialized societies differ from those of modern Americans found himself in a different kind of stressful situation when he came face to face with a killer. Biological anthropologist Samuel Erlacher left the urban jungle of Boston, where he was a graduate student at Harvard University, for the actual jungle of Papua New Guinea. Since 2013, he's worked among the Garisakang, an isolated clan of about 500 foragers and garden-scale farmers living in tropical villages without electricity or running water. Erlacher, now a postdoctoral fellow at Hunter College in New York, has collected more than 1,600 saliva samples in order to measure the stress hormone cortisol. But sometimes, fieldwork has its surprises, like the day Erlacher crossed paths with a cassowary, one of the world's most dangerous birds. At least 5 feet tall and flightless, cassowaries can sprint at 31 miles per hour, faster than Usain Bolt, Erlacher says, and deliver fatal slashes with their dagger-like middle talons. There have been at least 150 recorded cases of the creature attacking people, with at least one of those ending with someone dead. Erlacher describes the encounter, which occurred as he and his local guide, Mulapa, were hiking from his research village to a neighboring community that was interested in his work. In his own words, "We are carrying machetes. Mulapa is ahead of me, and we're walking down the trail. We hear something coming from the other direction on the trail. It's big, making a lot of noise, and sounds like it has two legs. So I'm expecting a human to come out. But all of a sudden, trotting directly toward us appears this huge, fully grown adult cassowary. It's taller than I am, and probably 120 or 130 pounds. I've spent quite a bit of time now in Papua New Guinea, but I'm still not used to huge birds running at me. It takes me a couple of seconds before I realize, oh, this is what's happening. And by the time I realize what is going on, Mulapa has dropped his machete and is climbing up a tree in front of me. I think I shout a couple of choice words and then drop my machete and start climbing as fast as I can, too, up the tree next to me. I've only gotten up maybe a few feet when it's right on me, but fortunately, it turns away and veers off the trail a little bit and just stares at us. Then it walks off, and we're safe. It could have been a very bad story had it decided to actually get me. So we survived, laughed about it, and then picked up our machetes and moved on." Trending news in science. First, incredible edible corn. Just because E. coli has a bad reputation doesn't mean it's not useful. Experts at Rutgers University, New Brunswick in New Jersey have found a way to boost corn's nutritional value by inserting a gene from the bacterium. The key was getting the grain to naturally produce enough methionine, an amino acid essential for an animal's growth and tissue repair. Currently, farmers add synthetic methionine to corn seed, which is costly and can hamper its growth. But the Rutgers team genetically engineered corn plants to include an E. coli gene that produces a specific enzyme. This tweak increased the grain's methionine production by 57%, all without stunting the plant. Next, killer wave. Experts claim skull fragments found in Papua New Guinea may be from the world's oldest tsunami victim. The remains were unearthed back in 1929 and had been dated at roughly 6,000 years old. However, researchers recently compared the geological sediment from the layers where the skull was found with that of a tsunami event that took place there in 1998, and they now suspect the person was killed by a tidal wave or was buried shortly before one struck the coast. According to the study's authors, their work could spur researchers of other coastal archaeological sites to take a closer look at the soil that preserved their finds. Next, enemies unseen. Just when we thought the ozone layer was safe, it faces another threat. A recent study reveals the chemicals dichloromethane, used in things like adhesives and aerosols, and 1,2-dichloroethane, used to make PVC, are breaking down our planet's ultraviolet radiation buffer. 3 decades ago, when nations drafted the Montreal Protocol, the international treaty that spurred regulation of chemical emissions that degrade the ozone layer, they skipped over these two because scientists didn't think the chemicals stayed stable long enough to amass and do damage. But new research reveals East Asia emits massive quantities of these chemicals, and when weather patterns blow the resulting buildup into tropical areas, the hot air lifts the emissions high enough into the atmosphere that they can break down the ozone layer. Next, noggin prodding. In the never-ending quest to understand the brain, researchers have developed a neural probe that's smaller, yet more sensitive. The new tech measures 10 millimeters long and 70 micrometers by 20 micrometers wide, thinner than an average piece of human hair, and boasts roughly 100 sensors per millimeter in length. Other probes usually only have a few dozen sensors total. To top it off, because these probes are so thin, researchers can use more of them across the whole brain to get a better picture of how different regions talk to each other, something other probes and electrodes couldn't really provide. Next, when the nose knows best. Our sense of smell is often underappreciated. It triggers some of our most emotional memories, and we're a lot better at sniffing things out than we think. And now it seems we might be at our olfactory best at certain times of the day. Researchers from Brown University and the E.P. Bradley Hospital Sleep Research Laboratory in Rhode Island studied the sleep cycles of 37 adolescents aged 12 to 15 in the lab for a week. The team found that over the course of each volunteer's natural sleep-wake cycle, they had a window of time in which their sense of smell was most sensitive. Each child's peak window was different, as was their level of sensitivity, but these periods were consistent for each individual over the course of the week. Though the work has some obvious limitations, such as the age and number of participants, it helps peel back more of the mysterious layers surrounding our most primitive sense. Our new past. Amid competing models of human evolution, a more complex story of our species emerges. How well do we know ourselves? The fossil record of hominins, our ancestors and closest kin, is limited, and the exploration of our collective deep history through genetic analysis is still a relatively new field. Neither excavations nor lab work has been able to reconstruct, definitively, the earliest chapter of the Homo sapiens story. For decades, two competing models of human evolution have dominated the field. One claims that H. sapiens evolved in a single place, Africa, and left that continent only fairly recently. The other suggests that our species evolved in multiple regions across both Africa and Eurasia. While debate between proponents of the two models rages on, there's one big problem. Researchers keep finding fossil and genomic evidence that don't fit either model. A paleoanthropological review published in Science in December acknowledged that the evidence had reached a tipping point. It's time, the authors said, for a new model of how our species evolved and spread across the world. But how does this new model compare with its predecessors? Here's the recent Africa origin model. Beginning in the mid-20th century, fossils unearthed in Africa showed a progression over millions of years from a primitive bipedal primate to anatomically modern humans. Based on those fossils, researchers developed the recent Africa Origin, RAO, model for human evolution and migration. According to the RAO model, although some groups of our predecessor Homo erectus left Africa roughly 2 million years ago, those early explorers eventually died out and did not contribute significantly to modern human ancestry. Instead, H. sapiens evolved exclusively in Africa and left the continent only about 60,000 years ago to spread across Eurasia. The RAO model has dominated Western thinking about human evolution for decades. Here's the multi-regionalism model. The RAO model does not account for some hominin fossils found outside of Africa, especially in China, that are 100,000 years or older, but appear to belong to anatomically modern humans. Based on these fossils and some artifacts, a challenge to RAO emerged: multi-regionalism. According to this model, after H. erectus populations left Africa roughly 2 million years ago, these intrepid hominins settled in pockets across Eurasia, where they continued to evolve into regional populations of H. sapiens. Multi-regionalism agrees with one aspect of RAO. When the relative latecomer sapiens left Africa 60,000 years ago and met up with other hominin populations in Eurasia, some interbreeding occurred. According to multi-regionalists, however, the ancestry of human populations outside of Africa, particularly in Asia, is rooted in the earlier regional H. erectus populations. And finally, here's the new model. According to the new model proposed in the December review in Science, H. sapiens evolved in Africa but left the continent much earlier, about 120,000 years ago, and in multiple waves of migration. In January, the work of a separate team, also published in Science, pushed the start date for modern humans migrating out of Africa even further back. Anatomically modern human fossils found in Israel were dated to more than 170,000 years old. While some of the early pioneers perished, others survived, reaching as far as Australia and East Asia. There, along the way, migrating H. sapiens met and sometimes interbred with other hominins, including Neanderthals in Europe and Denisovans in Asia, as well as potentially other populations not yet known to science. The new and more complex model doesn't just reflect the latest research, it also emphasizes the interconnectedness of our entire species and our closest kin. 20 Things You Didn't Know About Diamonds. 1. Diamond, a particular form or allotrope of carbon, is the hardest material we know of. It's more than twice as hard as the closest competition, silicon nitride and cubic boron nitride. 2. That extraordinary hardness arises from a strong and inflexible structure. 5 atoms form a tetrahedron and share electron pairs with each other. 3. In nature, diamond is typically created under extremes of pressure and temperature deep in Earth's mantle, about 90 miles or more beneath our planet's surface. 4. Except for space diamonds, of course. In 2017, researchers recreated for the first time the conditions under which they believe diamond rain forms in Uranus and Neptune. 5. These planets have internal temperatures just right for diamond formation. As hydrocarbon gases sink toward their cores, increasing pressure squeezes out the hydrogen atoms and presses the remaining carbon into diamond, which travels through the planet's heart as very pricey precipitation. Researchers believe a different process creates atmospheric diamond rain on Saturn and Jupiter. 6. Farther afield, the exoplanet 55 Cancri e was once thought to be made mostly of diamond. The 2012 findings were based on data that suggested the planet had abundant carbon under conditions favorable for the mineral's formation. 7. Sadly, 55 Cancri e lost some of its luster the following year when another team's analysis revealed there wasn't quite so much carbon on the planet, making it much less likely to be a diamond in the rough. 8. Back on Earth, diamonds destined for jewelry are, of course, rated by carat, cut, clarity, and color. But the latter is a bit of a misnomer. Diamond is naturally transparent. Any hint of hue indicates an impurity or structural deformation. 9. For example, a few nitrogen atoms among a diamond's millions of carbon atoms can make the rock appear yellow or brown, while blue diamonds have been besmirched by a few boron atoms. 10. The Hope Diamond, the most famous blue diamond, is a lot smaller than it once was. When it was first mined in India in the mid-17th century, the now 45.52-carat rock may have weighed more than 112 carats. 11. As for the Hope Diamond's curse, sorry, it was a made-up marketing ploy. On the topic of making things up, the first recorded attempt at synthesizing diamonds was back in 1880, when Scottish chemist J.B. Hannay heated sealed wrought iron tubes that had been filled with a mix of oils and lithium. 12. Alas, the tubes were prone to exploding. Think of it as the first diamond boom that was also a bust. 13. In 1955, however, labs at General Electric built on earlier research to create diamonds from graphite, another carbon allotrope, that had been subjected to extremes of pressure, nearly 1 million pounds per square inch, and temperature, 3,100 degrees Fahrenheit. 14. In subsequent decades, GE and other labs around the world developed additional techniques for creating synthetic diamonds, most of which have industrial applications such as drilling or grinding, for which the material is extremely well suited. 15. Speaking of suits, playing cards were likely invented in China more than a millennia ago, but diamonds weren't one of the four suits in a deck until relatively late in the game. 16. The cards appear to have spread along trade routes, first to Egypt and then to Europe by the 14th century. European merchants initially kept the suits created by the Egyptians, swords, wands, cups, and coins. 17. By the late 1400s, French enthusiasts had developed the suits that we know today, clubs, spades, hearts, and diamonds, the latter representing the merchant class and wealth acquisition. 18. In Renaissance folklore, however, the diamond was considered an amulet that warded off demons and madness. 19. What Renaissance folks called madness, we now understand as pathology. A 2017 British Journal of Psychiatry study urged healthcare practitioners to assess mental illness not just with formal measures, but also through simple observation. 20. The study's authors were inspired by an unlikely source, a documentary about Syd Barrett, founding member of iconic band Pink Floyd. Barrett left after a mental breakdown, poignantly chronicled in the group's tribute song to him, Shine On, You Crazy Diamond. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover, the magazine of science. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen again next time. Till then, expand your mind. I'm Steve Lord, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.